We continue the Shir in Gemara. The Gemara says, a person who teaches the son of his friend, Taita, then the Taita considers it as though he created that person. You teach someone Torah, it is as though you actually created him. Teaching him Torah, of course, doesn't mean that you teach him how to read a page. Teaching Torah naturally means you teach him the mitzvahs of the Torah and have him become religious, obeying those mitzvahs, then it is as though you actually created that person. A different place in the Gemara it says, as though you gave birth to him. That person becomes your son. He is your son for one thing, and also he is your creation. By teaching him Torah, by injecting into him the knowledge of Torah and mitzvahs, it is as though you gave birth to him and as though you actually created him. This, of course, we have to understand, because it is interesting, Yerushalmi, which says that if all the wise men on earth got together, all the magicians and all the most learned people united and combined all their efforts, it is impossible for all of them combined to create the tiniest worm. No human being can create life. It is impossible to create life. And this is an absolute fact. There are scientists today who claim to create cells, living cells and so forth, and we know positively that that is a complete fraud, because the Torah, the word of Hashem, guarantees the impossibility of any human ever actually creating. The question is then, how can we employ this term? But a person who teaches someone Torah, it is as though he actually created him. The answer is, the Mefarshim say, this means that life itself was created by Hashem. The living spirit was created by Hashem, but this person who has not learned Torah, who is not religious, is in the same category as a living animal. He is in the category of a behemoth, chaya. He is not actually human. He does not have a soul. So he is taught Taita. The person teaching him Taita has created a person. He has converted him. He has elevated him from the category of behemoth and chaya to a category of an adam, a complete person, which of course is most vital, most important. At this point, in my own personal experience, Ben Ezal says that In fact, to use very fittingly the pasuk that the Gemara uses here for this, the proof of this, the pasuk by Avraham Avinu, who taught Torah, converted people, brought them into faith. It says, "V'yis ha-nefesh asher osu b'chodon," the souls that Avraham Avinu created in Choron, the city of Choron, and Baruch Meshav Ezal translates Choron to mean Charon Af, Kas, anger, against the will of the parents of these people, against the will of the relatives who wanted these people to remain irreligious. Avraham Avinu went against their will and took upon himself the risk of inviting their anger and their vengeance. Despite this hazard, he still entered into this tremendous task of creating these souls. So we have this word V'yis ha-nefesh, which proves again that he created the nefesh, the soul. The living spirit of the person was there. They were alive, but they were like animals because they lived like animals. They did not recognize the existence of Hashem, and he injected into them the emunah, the faith, and this was the nefesh which he created. As I said in my experience in the past, years ago when I had started with this type of work, where children attending the Talmud Torah who came from religious homes were given this type of information and they adhered to it, as though there was an inner spirit that craved this information, that thirsted for this spirit of religion. And of course there was a lot of opposition to this. And the opposition many times caused these children or these youngsters, these youths, to fall back into their original status of irreligion and lack of faith. Few of them remained steadfast. When I came to Eretz Yisrael, I spoke to Rabbi Koch of Leizel about this. He offered me the greatest possible encouragement. It was at the time he made two statements. He said that coming to Eretz Yisrael was very important. It was a big mitzvah. I wanted to settle there at that time, and he said to me that there was no mitzvah to settle for me, because settling in Eretz Yisrael is kodesh, very holy. But working with youth and instilling in them a spirit of emunah and faith and mitzvahs was greater than the holiness of Eretz Yisrael. This was creation. Secondly, he said that not to fear the opposition, not to be frightened by it, not to consider it a setback, because those who are opposed to it, who are opposed to religion, are themselves in the category of animals. They are not considered a medaber, a human. A human is above an animal only in that he has the power of belief in serving Hashem. Otherwise, what difference is there? An animal gets up in the morning after a long sleep, goes out and forages for its food. It finds its food, it gorges itself, it rests, it plays, and then it goes to sleep again. This is the normal life pattern of an animal. The normal life pattern of a person who does not have religion is he goes to sleep at night, he gets up in the morning, he eats, he goes around to play at work. Nowadays, there's more gold bricking and playing at work, actually working. He earns the money to buy more food to eat, so he can have a nice, pleasant sleep at night. He can get up in the morning to go out and eat and work again. Exactly the same as an animal, except that he also adds to it lashon hara, slander, stealing, different types of crimes. The same as an animal, only adding to it these sins. The difference then is, when is he a human? When he has the soul, when he has the spirit, when he has that emunah, that faith in Hashem, when he serves Hashem and obeys the mitzvahs, then he is an adam, then he is a medaber. So, therefore, not to be taken aback by this opposition that comes from behemoths, who are opposed to seeing their like being converted to humans and deserting them. These were very important words of encouragement, because it's very gratifying to know that at least the type of work was the proper step and was a mitzvah in itself. And if it applies to anyone, if anybody can be zecha to create a soul, to inject into a person the belief in Hashem, the belief in the Torah, a fulfillment of the mitzvahs of Hashem, that person is really accomplishing. First statement in the Gemara is as though he created that person. Secondly, it's important to note the wording. Remember, we said the wording was, one who teaches the son of his friend Teda, it is as though he created him. And why does the Gemara use the son of his friend? Here again, for that same reason, because this shows that his friend gave birth to a child, to a son. The birth of that son is only the physical birth and nothing else. He brought a physical being into the world, a ruach chayim, a spirit of life, but no soul. So the one that completes it, completes that action, that fills that body with a soul, it is as though he really gave birth to this son and created him. This, the Gemara states, is always the rule, that if one person starts to do a mitzvah and does not complete it, and the second person comes along and completes the mitzvah, it is the second one who gets credit for the accomplishment of that mitzvah. We find even in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was in the Torah commends so highly that when the Jews were about to leave Egypt, what was on their minds the day of leaving? To go and collect all the wealth, riches, and spoils of Egypt and take it with them. Moshe Rabbeinu ignored this type of amassing of wealth. He went to fulfill the mitzvah of Yosef HaTzadik, who had left his will to the Jews, saying that when you leave Egypt, take along my body with you to be buried in Israel. And Moshe Rabbeinu went to the river now to fetch up the coffin of Yosef HaTzadik, take it with him. So while all the Jews were occupied in collecting this wealth, he himself alone occupied himself with the gathering in, the carrying of the coffin of Yosef HaTzadik. We took out of Egypt, crossed the dry land on the Red Sea, into the desert, and carried it in the desert for 40 years. Then, at the end of those 40 years, Moshe Rabbeinu was nostalgic. He passed away in the desert. He did not have the privilege of entering into Eretz Yisrael. Led by Yahushua, the Jews entered into Israel and they conquered the land. And then it says that in the city of Shechem, they buried Yosef HaTzadik. Who? The Jews, not Moshe Rabbeinu. He did not complete the mitzvah, he did not get credit for it. The ones that completed the act of the mitzvah got the credit for it, even in a case like that, even after such a commendable act. So this teaches us then, same applies here too. Person fulfills the first mitzvah of the Torah, give birth to a child, the very first mitzvah, to have children. And yet, that's only the beginning of the mitzvah, because then you have a shinantam levonecho. You must teach Torah to your children, give them the proper education, Torah education, and then you've completed the mitzvah. But if someone else teaches Ben Chaveda Torah, someone else does it for you, he is the one who gets the credit for the entire mitzvah from the beginning, the actual creation and birth too. Unless, of course, as the Shulchan Aruch says, that if a father is incapable of teaching his children Torah, he himself is not that much advanced in knowledge, but he sends his son, his children, this applies to both sons and daughters, he sends his children to the yeshiva to learn Torah. He sends them at his expense, or he pays for the learning, the tuition, or even for private tutoring, then he gets the full credit, as though he did the actual teaching, because he supplied the teaching, the lessons in Torah. So this is the second point. Third, the Gemara says further, that if a person teaches somebody else Torah, not only is it as though he created that person, but it is also as though he created himself. He was created by Hashem. And here he gets the credit for creating himself. Why? Again, because a person is supposed to advance in life, in the performance of mitzvahs, and there are two steps. There is lumay, the study of Torah, and there is further, higher, lelamay, the teaching of Torah. So a person who even advances to the point of becoming a good talmid, a good student, and learning Torah, he is not really complete. When he goes on to the highest level of teaching Torah, teaching others Torah, then he becomes complete himself. So by teaching others Torah, it means he has completed the creation of himself too. Again, we must stress very strongly, this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, Rav Nosenzel brings this point out very pointedly. And when we say you teach somebody Torah, and the Gemara speaks about, we've had a lesson on what is considered a Rebbe. Who is considered a person's Rebbe? What must he have taught him to be classified as his Rebbe? There's a debate in the Gemara about this. Is it one who started him off on the reading, the Aleph Beis and the Chumash? Is it one who taught him Gemara, advanced learning? Or is it one who taught him the majority of his knowledge? These different opinions found in the Gemara. The final word, the final halacha, who is considered the person's real Rebbe, the person who brought him to the highest level of faith and religion and mitzvahs, the one who brought him to Avedas Hashem B'Yemis, or to Iskarvus to the Tzadik Emes. This is what's meant by a Rebbe, this is what's meant by teaching a person Torah. Teach a person how to read and learn Gemara. without teaching him the actual fulfillment of mitzvahs, that's useless. Learning itself without carrying out these mitzvahs has no meaning, has no value. Here what we say, one who teaches a person Torah, it means he teaches him the knowledge and how to carry this out. Now, the Gemara adds to this, that if a person teaches someone Torah, as we said, meaning he teaches him to do mitzvahs, he encourages him, he influences him to perform mitzvahs, then the person who teaches gets the credit for the mitzvahs that the other person does. It is as though he himself did that mitzvah. Without doing the mitzvah itself, just by influencing that person to do it, he gets the credit that he himself did it also. Of course, the question is, let's take the example of tzedakah. Let's say that the person himself influences a second person, induces him to give a stipulated sum for tzedakah, for charity. According to this statement, if he made him give $100 to charity, it's as though this person himself gave the $100. Question is, what's so good about that? There's a much stronger statement in the Gemara, Bava Basra, which says, Godel hami'asa yesa min oisa, that if a person induces somebody to give tzedakah, then the person who did the influencing gets a bigger mitzvah than the person who gave the tzedakah. So we see from that Gemara that making a person do a mitzvah is bigger than doing the mitzvah itself. Why does the Gemara say it's as though he did the mitzvah himself? The answer is what the Gemara says here, the Gemara adds a point here. The Gemara adds that not only what we said previously, that it's bigger to influence somebody, but it's also, besides that, in addition to that, you also get the credit of doing the mitzvah. So the person who makes someone give tzedakah gets two mitzvahs. One, the bigger mitzvah making him give tzedakah, plus an equal amount of the mitzvah of the person who gave. He has two mitzvahs. He has the mitzvah of mi'aseh and eiseh, while the person who gave has only the mitzvah of eiseh, of doing the mitzvah itself. So valuable is it to help others, to lead others into mitzvah. Avinu stresses the words of the Zayin HaKodesh. It's like, Ko'o man the ochid b'yoda de chayavaya. It's not the exact wording, but that's the term that's used. Ashrei, ashrei. Fortunate, blessed is he who holds on to the hand of a drowning person and rescues him. Who holds on to the hand of a rasha, an evil person who's drowning in his sins, whose the light of whose soul is being extinguished, and he reignites this soul, saves him from his avedas, brings him closer to Hashem, ashrei to that person who's zecha to that. This is what the Beis Zohar calls an eitz pri eisa pri, a tree that is not barren or sterile, a tree that brings forth fruit like the tree itself. A beautiful tree that has no fruit is a tzaddik who's religious for himself, who learns Torah for himself, but he does not assist others. The main thing is to be zechut to do mitzvahs and to make others do it also. Be mezakeh, help others this privilege. Then we go back to the Mishnah, explaining the Mishnah. If you recall, when we started this entire topic, this perek, we started with the words, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek Lam Haba. Every Jew alive has a part in Gan Eden. Every Jew without exception. As soon as he is born, there is a place in Gan Eden set aside for this Jew. No matter what kind of Jew he is, he has his place in Gan Eden. If he commits sins, he is punished for them. But he does not lose his place in Gan Eden. He is punished temporarily. Of course, the punishment is very harsh. To describe the fires of Gehenna, the Gemara says the least we can say about it is that there are 60 times the intensity of any fire known on earth. And as is brought, there are certain types of punishment that are worse even than Gehenna, Rahman al-Islam. But still, after paying the price for the sins committed, then every Jew who becomes purified during his stay in Gehenna, whose soul is cleansed of the sins he committed, then goes to Gan Eden, paradise. The Mishnah says this word, every Jew, is not to be taken literally, because there are exceptions. There are certain cases that actually lose their place in Gan Eden permanently. They must suffer in Gehenna forever, eternally. Now, there's nothing more horrible than an eternity of suffering, because no matter how bad the suffering, how long it is, as long as this comes to an end, then it's not that difficult to bear. It is known that, this is brought in this form, that a suffering that has, that terminates, then when it's over, a person goes through a serious illness. When it's actually over, he doesn't really feel the difference when he suffered for a day, a week, or a month. It's over, it's finished with. Worst thing is only when something is malignant and endless, as is shown. And this is the case of these exceptions. The Mishnah lists the exceptions, those people who can never get to Gan Eden. The one we discussed the last year was one who says he does not believe that Torah is written by Hashem, written by man, Chas V'Shalom. That person can never be in the company of the righteous in Gan Eden. We must believe implicitly that the Torah is the work of Hashem. Hashem is the author of the Torah. The Torah means not just the Chumash, the Book of Prophets. The Torah means the Gemara, the Talmud, all the different facets of the Torah. Everything, the Gemara says, was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Mount Sinai. Every word of the Torah, every word of Sfora that was written even later on, are all parts of the Torah that are the word of Hashem. Now we come to the next topic. The next statement of the Mishnah was, the exception to those who go to Gan Eden is a person called Apikaitis. And Apikaitis has no part in Gan Eden. And the Gemara asks, what is the meaning, what is the translation of the word Apikaitis? Nowadays, we use that word loosely. It's used as a term of a person who is a kofed, one who is an atheist, does not believe in Hashem. We say he's an Apikaitis. But that's a loosely used term. What is the actual meaning of the word Apikaitis when the Gemara says it here in reference to a loss of Gan Eden eternally? The Gemara answers that Apikaitis is one who embarrasses a Talmud Chacham. One who embarrasses or disrespects a Talmud Chacham, a learned person, a sage, then that person has committed a sin that is so great, worse even than going against any of the mitzvahs of Hashem. And this is, as the Zohar Kodesh points out, that Hashem is very particular about the honor of the tzaddikim, of the Talmidei Chachamim. More particular than his own covet, Hashem will forego his own honor. Person can be forgiven for it, but not one who will insult or transgress against the covet of a Talmud Chacham. Now, again, note that this is directly tied in with the former statement. Apikaitis is one who disrespects, who disgraces the honor of a Talmud Chacham, a culture king, thousands of times more so, one who disgraces the covet of the rabbis of the Gemara, our true Talmidei Chachamim, which means that he speaks against their words and say that their words are not the words of Hashem. It's the greatest disgrace a person can speak against the words of the Gemara, against these rabbis in the Gemara. To say even that these words are their own, that they are very wise, and that these words were thought up by themselves, Chas V'Shalom, this is an Apikaitis. Now we find, very strongly hinted at this, the words in the Zohar Kodesh, spoken by Moshe Rabbeinu himself. In the Zohar Kodesh we have a section of Moshe Rabbeinu's discussions, heavenly discussions on the mitzvahs of the Torah. On this point, he comes out very strongly, where it is stated that the rabbis of the Gemara, we say that they are, their statements are the word of Hashem. And that's why we could see something which is incomprehensible to us. We cannot understand how opposites can exist together. How could fire and water exist together, literally merge with each other? How can you have yes and no together at the same time? How can you have permissible and forbidden at the same time? Well, you have a statement in the Gemara, debated by two of the rabbis of the Gemara. One says permissible, and one says forbidden. Both of these are the word of Hashem. It is only Hashem who can have two opposites exist together, something which human beings cannot understand, cannot fathom. So, in other words, these rabbis of the Gemara are actually Hashem speaking. So here the Zohar Kodesh points out, very carefully note, that somehow it seems to be overlooked by most people. Somehow we don't stop to study the names of the rabbis of the Gemara. You do not find, in most cases, the regular common names. Well, for example, take Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu himself, that name himself is so great. Zohar Kodesh says his name itself is Hashem. Spelled backwards, Moshe Rabbeinu is Hashem. Showing that whatever he said is actually Pi HaGvura. From the mouth of Hashem Kaviyacho, these words came. So too, the Zohar Kodesh says, in the case of most of the other rabbis of the Gemara, we can see hinted at the fact that they are names that apply to Hashem. The next greatest rabbi was Hillel HaZaken. Hillel, his name Hillel, is a name. Actually, this represents Hashem's name. Hashem, Ado, Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, is 65, the gematria of Hillel, which stands for the name of Hashem. Rabbi Akiva, which is seven times Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei with the Kollel, also has the combinations of Hashem's name in it. We discussed it at length previously. Shem Yabbaik, the middle letters of Akiva's name is Shem Yabbaik, which is Hashem Elikim combined. You do not find, usually in the regular written Torah, the name Rabbi Yossi. We know the name Yosef. But Rabbi Yossi, where did that name come from? Rabbi Yossi, why just Yossi? Because Rabbi Yossi is Begimetria Elikim. Again, most of these names have connotations of Hashem's name. Rabbi Yudoi, one of the Tamidim of Rabbi Shimon Yochoizal, Begimetria Kael. And one of the most famous names in the Gemara, a name that you do not hear even regularly. But in the Gemara, it's constantly mentioned, Rava. Rava, just about the most oft-mentioned name of the Amoraim. Rava, Reish Beis Aleph, actually one of the Shemas of Hashem, a combination of Hashem's name, Yud Kei and Vav Kei combined, which is Hashem Elikim, Yud Kei Vav Kei Elikim, combined with Hashem Adnei, both together, Hashem Elikim is 112, Hashem Adnei is 91, together it is 203, which is Rava. And so on with many other names of the rabbis of the Gemara, proving that these are all rabbis who speak the word of Hashem. So that a person who does not believe in that the Torah, the Gemara, is the word of Hashem, is disgracing the covet of these rabbis, and of course the covet of Hashem. And that is why we can understand a person like that does not merit ever getting to Gan Eden to be in the presence of these tzaddikim. And the Gemara says, let us analyze example. What do these people say when they show this disrespect to the rabbis of the Gemara, to the Talmidei Chachamim? The Gemara says, for example, if a person says, what good are these rabbis to us? Do they study Torah to help us? They study Torah for themselves, for their own cover, their own honor. This is a direct insult to these Talmidei Chachamim, and this is what's meant by an Abakaris. The Gemara says, because actually they refuse to recognize the fact that their studying of Torah by these Talmidei Chachamim is what sustains the world. Hashem swore that if not Imlei Brisi, if not for the Teda, Hashem says, then Chukai Shemayim Vodas Leisamti, the heaven and earth would cease to exist, and everything in it. So all peoples who are alive today are alive only because of those who study the Teda. And here they show their ingratitude and their insulting attitude to these tzaddikim. In addition, the fact that they are alive despite for their sins is again due to these tzaddikim. We find that when Hashem decided to destroy the city of Sodom and Amida, then Avraham Avinu pleaded on behalf of these two cities. And his point, his argument was, save these cities and the zechus of whom? Of the tzaddikim that exist in these cities. If you find any tzaddikim there, all the people in the cities, all these sinners that are shoyim, should have their lives saved because of these tzaddikim. And this is why many people today, who are actually wicked, evil, the shoyim, still remain alive because of the zechus of these tzaddikim whom they insult, whom they disgrace, not knowing that it's the zechus of the tzaddikim to keep them alive. Well, the Gemara says another example of the arrogant attitude of those who have no faith in tzaddikim and tamid hachamim is, their statement is, what good are these rabbonim, these rabbis, to us? They have never really helped us. For example, they have never made permissible for us the eating of a raven. A raven, an orev, is an unkosher bird. So what did they accomplish? The Torah says that a raven is treif, it's unkosher. The Torah says that a dove is kosher. These rabbis have never made permissible a raven, nor have they made forbidden a dove. So what did they add? What was the purpose of these rabbis? What did they submit to us in addition to what we already know? What does the Gemara use these as an example, the raven and the dove? The answer is that we use as a symbol of tumah, symbol of tumah, of impurity. We want to speak about something that's treif, unkosher, impure. We use the raven because the raven is very impure in its so-called family life. The raven would live with, has no separate mate of its own. It can mate with any bird at any time. It does not keep purity of family life. That sounds small. The fact is, the Gemara says, that the raven is one of the three that was cursed. When Noach placed all living things in the ark, in the Tevah, and he commanded them that there should be no mating then, the raven was one of the three that did mate and received an everlasting curse for it. And that is why the raven is used as a symbol of tumah, impurity. Whereas the dove is the only bird that will never desert its own mate. It will never mate with any other bird, even another dove. Only its one-time mate for life. And therefore this is the symbol of purity. That's why the Gemara uses this term, kosher. Pure is the dove. The Gemara says that Rava, in order to show up these people, when he had a shayla brought to him, a shayla about meat, whether it was kosher or not, they brought it to him and he studied it, and they said, can we use this meat? And he said, he looked at it and he found that he could permit the use of the meat. So he said to these people, don't ever say the rabbis did not permit the eating of a raven. Because when you brought this meat to me, you considered it treif. For you, this meat was a raven. I declare it kosher now, so I'm making a raven kosher for you. If they brought the meat to him with a question mark, he found that it was treif, so he said to you, the meat was questionable. It was possibly kosher in your minds. I'm telling you that it's unkosher, and I'm showing you how it's possible to make a dove declare it unkosher. So never again say the rabbis haven't got the power of making kosher or treif anything, because I'm showing you where you have your hands tied. It's in the hands of the poskim, the rabbis, to settle these questions, these shilas. The Gemara goes a step further. The Gemara says, what is an apikaitis when we say one who disrespects a Talmud Chacham, who shows disrespect for a rabbi, what does this mean? The Gemara answers, Rav Nachman says, one who calls his rabbi by his name. Instead of saying, using the term rabbi, he calls him by his name. One who does that, the crime is so serious, it's not just a sin, but it's an eternal sin, which is punishable by eternally losing an eidah. And this the Gemara shows proof in the story of Gehazi. We learn the Navi story, we discussed this point at length. Gehazi was the servant, the Mishamish of Elisha HaNavi, and he could have been on the highest level possible, closest Talmud Elisha HaNavi. He lost his life because he disobeyed Elisha HaNavi in taking some gifts from Naaman, the general that was cured of his leprosy, but he still had his Gan Eden awaiting him. This he lost, the Beda says, when one day he spoke of Elisha HaNavi and called him by his name. And he said to the king that this is the woman whom Elisha saved, whose child Elisha saved. And using the word Elisha rather than Elisha, my Rebbe, Elisha HaNavi. Because he failed to call him Rebbe Elisha, or his Rebbe, therefore he lost his Gan Eden permanently. This is one name the Mishnah classifies specifically here too. Which people in history lost their Gan Eden? One of them is Gehazi. This is an item that practically all agree on. Now, the question about what is meant by calling a rabbi by his name, in the Shulchan Aruch, practically all of the Paiskim base their statements on the words of Rashi HaKadosh here. Rashi HaKadosh, the Gemara says, he does not call his Rebbe with the name Rebbe, but by his name. Rashi HaKadosh says it means where he said the name, did not say, my Rebbe so-and-so. My Rebbe so-and-so, which means, most Paiskim imply, means that he's speaking to somebody about his Rebbe. He does not call my Rebbe so-and-so. That means that calling him by his name is permissible if he says Rebbe so-and-so. Let's say his name is Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov, he says, he's using his name, the name is Rabbi, the word Yaakov, but he's saying Rabbi Yaakov, that's permissible. To say Yaakov alone is the sin. The question arises now, when he says Rabbi Yaakov, is that permissible only when speaking to others, when his Rebbe is not around, but to his Rebbe he must say just the word Rebbe alone without the word Yaakov? Or may he say Rebbe Yaakov directly to his Rebbe, address him as Rebbe Yaakov, as long as he's using the word Rebbe? This question is brought in the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah says that if a person says Rebbe so-and-so, Rebbe Yaakov, for example, it is permissible. He does not say whether he's speaking to him or behind his back. The Shach is one of the most powerful Paiskim in Yerudea. The Shach states emphatically that this means only behind his Rebbe's back. Speaking about his Rebbe, he could say, my Rebbe Rabbi Yaakov, quote so-and-so. But if he addresses his Rebbe, he must say only Rebbe and not the name too. And the Shach says, V'chein noyagin, this is our custom to this day. This fact, the Shach is usually the most powerful of all the rabbis in the Shulchan Aruch, in Yerudea. Yet here we have a group of Paiskim who dispute this, who question this point. We have the Beis Yosef, the Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam, brought the Prichadosh, Shidozal, bring this question. We find that when the Nevi'im spoke about the future of Moshe Rabbeinu, whole discussion of Chumash, then Yeshua approached Moshe Rabbeinu. We find these words in the Chumash, where he said, Adonai Moshe Kloy, my master, my Rebbe Moshe, stop them from saying this prophecy, that you are going to pass away and I will lead them into Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to hear such words. Stop them. But his words were addressing Moshe Rabbeinu. He said, Adeni Moshe, my Rebbe Moshe Rabbeinu. So we see from there that it is permissible to address your Rebbe by saying to him, Rebbe, so, like Rebbe Yaakov, for example. This is their proof. They do not state this too emphatically. So the question still remains slightly up in the air. The question is, though, could it be, or it couldn't be, it's impossible that the Shach overlooked the Pasuk in Chumash. It's an impossibility. What about this Pasuk? The answer is very obvious, must be obvious, that this is an exceptional case, because Moshe Rabbeinu, as we said before, there are certain people, certain rabbis in history, where we do not find the word Rebbe used at all. Some cases where we find Rav, the name Rav, like Rav Yosef, or Rav Huna, the rabbis of Bavel, rabbis of Eretz Yisrael, or the Tanoim, the former ones were called Rabbi, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and then the chief rabbi, the Nasi, was called Rabbon. Rabbon means chief rabbi. That's going higher than Rav or Rebbe, is Rabbon. And then it says, Godol mi Rabbon Shemay. There is something higher than Rabbon too. And that's the name alone, without the word Rebbe or Rav or Rabbon. For example, you have one who was not only a rabbi in Eretz Yisrael, but also the chief rabbi, the Nasi. He had no name Rabbon or Rebbe or Rav, Hillel. Hillel HaZaken, Hillel had no name of Rebbe. Just Hillel alone, his name was so great that it was greater even than the word Rabbon. And this, of course, was the name of Moshe Rabbeinu too. Moshe Rabbeinu, whose name was so great, it entails the name of Hashem. In fact, the entire name itself has such connotations. There are so many things in the name of Moshe Rabbeinu showing all the Gilgulim or Pikabola that itself has more Kedusha than any other name of any rabbi. And therefore, that itself is speaking, is saying a word that's higher than Abon. So in this case, when Yeshua said Adeni Moshe, it's like saying the highest possible respectful word in addressing Moshe Rabbeinu. So it could be that this is an exceptional case. In any event, we have no proof either way. We do know, as the Gemara points out directly, that this is what is meant by an apikodes. One who mentions his Rebbe's name openly, as Gehazi did, for which he lost his Ganeden. This is another one of those cases where a person can lose Ganeden. The Gemara says another case we have is a case that we learned previously, the Gemara Baba Basra. For those who forgot the story, we could repeat this very much in brief. It's the case of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. He was very strict in his teachings. Rabbi Yochanan taught Rish Lakish, if you recall. He elevated him to a point of a Talmud Mufok. But he taught respect for his words. Why? Rabbi Yochanan did not demand respect for himself. He demanded respect for words that were words of Torah. There was no possibility of a person daring to question the word of Rabbi Yochanan. In this case, the Gemara tells a story that one time Rabbi Yochanan was sitting and lecturing, teaching a class, and he told them about something that was going to happen in the future. The future means when Mashiach would come. Something which was tantamount to a miracle. And yet Rabbi Yochanan stated this was a miracle, but it will take place physically. This was the fact that Hashem is going to set up the gates of Yerushalayim made of diamonds, or a diamond that is 30 that is 10 by 20, 10 amis by 20 amis. That means 20 by 40 feet, approximately. Diamonds, 20 by 40 feet for the gates of Yerushalayim.